Greetings, fellow Portlanders. From the Emerson News Network, this is Legion of News.
From high above the milk packing district in the heart of beautiful southeast Portland, Oregon, this, my friends, is Legion of News, a one-hour distillation of all important knowledge from everywhere. My name is Rick Emerson alongside Don Taylor, who is, even now as I speak these words to you, preparing information on a vast swath of happenings, including, but not limited to, the following.
The owner of Ski Bowl is sentenced in a hit and run. A burning bush sets a Woodburn church on fire, and a man who cut off his own arm gets a bionic replacement.
As always, my friends, have no doubt that this conglomeration of factual discourse and ideological screed will render you shocked, amazed, enraptured, and demonstrably more intelligent than when you began this hour. And now, without further ado, pay heed, for this is Legion of News.
Good afternoon, I'm Don Taylor, and this is absolutely everything you need to know for Friday, August 27th, 2010. The owner of Mount Hood Ski Bowl was sentenced to 30 days in jail for a Southwest Portland hit and run that put a bicyclist in the hospital. Kirk Hanna pleaded guilty yesterday to failure to perform the duties of a driver, driving under the influence of intoxicants, and fourth-degree assault. As part of a plea deal, Hanna will spend 30 days in jail, pay a $1,000 fine, and have his license suspended for a year. The judge will allow Hanna to serve his jail time on weekends, and the assault charge will be dropped if Hanna reaches a civil case settlement with the victim.
What is the Vancouver Ski Bowl?
The Mount Hood Ski Bowl.
The Mount Hood Ski Bowl. What is the Mount Hood Ski Bowl?
I don't know exactly. I think it's that place where, well, people go and in the wintertime they can go and they can do things with the inner tubes and stuff like that. And then in the summer, that's where people go and they bungee jump go down that.
All right. So you mean ski as an S-K-I, not S-K-E-E.
No,
not the thing
yes.
with the ramp and the ball and the little rings where you throw the
no,
deal.
No, not
and the,
ski ball.
Well, that's what I wondered.
Ski bowl.
Okay. Well, you don't know what the hell it is either. So let's not get uppity early on in the program. I was just asking for some sort of goddamn clarification because I don't know what the Ski Bowl is, because maybe I don't live my life in as cosmopolitan a fashion as some.
It's an amusement. It's an attraction.
You're an amusement. That's what you are. Your mom's an amusement. So is your face. All right. Ski Bowl just sounds
this
like
this is
a
how we're going to start our workday
no,
together. Really,
just,
this is it.
Just asking for
your mom is an amusement. That's how we're starting our workday.
Your mom's a ski bowl, sister. It's just one of those things where we promise people clarification, but I figured that should include us at some point. And so I wanted to have this clarified, because ski bowl sounds like, you know what it is? It sounds like an event is the thing.
Oh, I see.
You're like, welcome to the 4th annual Michelin Tire Ski Bowl. I'm Dick Ebersole. And then you don't know what the hell it is.
Well, this is one of those things where it didn't occur to me that I had to go look it up, because I just assume everybody else knows what it is. And if I don't actually know what it is, who cares? Because I don't know about anything else.
All right. I think that might be a flawed analysis of the situation on
your
part.
Yeah, I know, given that I'm supposed to be, like, clarifying things and educating people on the news.
I hate to too fine a point on the issue, but it doesn't really matter at this point.
Yes, it does. It certainly does.
Here's the thing. Is the amount of time we have invested in discussing this so vastly outweighs my interest in it?
It is the Mount Hood Adventure Park at Ski Bowl. It has over 20 attractions, including an alpine slide, a bungee tower, a zip line, Indy carts, a sky chair, a rock wall, horse and pony rides, mini golf.
Is this just
a bungee trampoline?
Is this some sort of like a depressing low-rent Mount Hood Disneyland?
It kind of is.
In our constitutionally protected opinion.
It's my understanding that it's this thing that they came up with to try and, like, get people to go to Mount Hood when it wasn't snowing.
All right.
So that they could still make some money off of people.
Okay. So it's not just a place where one goes to freeze to death and meet one's ancestors in the sky.
No, it's where someone goes to play disc golf and badminton.
You know, here's the thing I didn't think about until just a couple of years ago. You know what else is one of those words like Kleenex and Xerox and Band-Aid? Frisbee. Because, you know, when I was a boy, Don Taylor, everybody just called it frisbee golf. But then I moved to Oregon, whenever, like 98, and everybody just called it disc golf. And it's because the Whammo company must have at some point issued some kind of injunction or threatened a lawsuit about people playing so-called frisbee golf.
Probably.
Disc golf is just an awkward thing to say. It's one of those, disc is a strange word, especially if you have to then go and do another hard consonant. It seems like we ought to come up with an easier to say, the phrase to describe the whole thing.
Flat spinny thing golf.
No, not that. Something that's functional.
Platter golf.
Platter golf is not bad, and it sounds sophisticated in a strange sort of way. It sounds as though one is a part of the upper crust. Not really. Here's Don Taylor.
So the crash that we were speaking about.
What crash?
A long time ago. In which the owner of Mount Hood Ski Bowl.
Which is what again?
Which is this attraction with mini golf and horses and ponies and alpine slide and bungees. He was driving and he hit a bicyclist and put the bicyclist in the hospital. It happened about 2:30 a.m. on May 23rd north of the Selwood Bridge. The night of the crash, Eric Purcell and his girlfriend were on their way home from the prom when they said they saw an SUV pass them at more than 80 miles per hour and then a few seconds later heard a crash. They turned around, they went and they stayed with the victim, who was a bicyclist that they said was all bloody. He looked pretty messed up.
Okay.
Anyway, so Hannah has been...
charged. It's a bad year for him. All right. Well done, sir.
There's not enough bungee jumping and disc golf in the world to cheer you up after that.
Oh, there really isn't. Have you ever been... can you hand me back the... I guess it's not listed in the story. Have you ever been, and I know the answer to some of these things, bungee jumping?
No.
Disc golfing.
I have not actually been disc golfing, but I did do a story on it once for a newspaper. So I walked the course and watched a bunch of guys during a tournament.
Have you ridden a pony? The real kind?
Yes.
Okay. All right. We can move on now.
Thank you. Have you ever ridden a pony?
No.
Have you ever played disc golf?
No.
Have you ever bungee jumped?
No.
Okay.
Anything, you could probably just extend that list for the remainder of this hour, and I will have not done most of those things.
Miniature golf?
No. You are listening to... Wait. Once.
Ever ride down a snowy hillside in a inner tube?
Yes. No. The answer to that is no. I watched somebody do it, though. I watched somebody do it, and that was the same day that I watched a friend of mine lose one of his teeth because he went down face first in a flexible flyer into a railroad track. You are listening to Legion of News right here at PDX.FM. Don't forget, the show is available on your mobile device as well. If you'd like to listen to this program on your handheld, you can do that at mobile.pdx.fm. It arrives magically, as Arthur C. Clarke might say, on your iPod later on today via iTunes, if you want to do that. It's also on your RSS tracker of choice, and it's available in archived form at pdx.fm or at legionofnews.com. This is Don Taylor.
Flames from a burning bush spread to a church in Woodburn late Thursday morning. Firefighters were dispatched about 11:15 to a report of smoke coming from the Church of the Nazarene at 3601 Newburg Highway.
Is this really a story about a burning bush at a church?
It is indeed.
Okay.
A passerby used a fire extinguisher to put out most of the flames before emergency crews arrived. The cause of the fire remains under investigation.
Wait, no, let's back up for a second. Was it just the bush that was on fire? It was not the church building itself?
The burning bush was next to the church, and so it kind of spread to the outside wall of the church, but it did not, like, consume the church.
Was the well, of course not, because the...
They were just trying to send a message.
I was just going to say, of course the church was not consumed, because it burned brightly with the Spirit of the Lord, and yet was not consumed as Moses looked upon it and heard the message, and so forth. Was the thing about the burning bush in the sort of raw content of the story as you first discovered it, or did you just add that to be biblically clever?
No, that's it. In fact, the headline as I originally found it was Burning Bush Ignites Woodburn Church.
Okay, that's just fantastic. I'd like to salute whoever it is that, you know, they sort of covered that story initially and then decided that needed to be in the headline. Well done. I'm impressed. Fantastic. You are listening to Legion of News at right here at PDX.FM. This is Don Taylor.
Glenn Beck holds a rally at the National Mall, or on the National Mall, as it were, whichever is correct.
It's a mall by which, and the mall in this case just means a big strip of grass and concrete. Not a thing you could be in unless you're dead.
Well, anyway, Glenn Beck will be on it tomorrow, and his rally will feature Sarah Palin, although Beck calls it a non-political event. Several Tea Party groups are involved, but Jenny Beth Martin of the Tea Party Patriots.
That's the whitest name I've ever heard.
Jenny Beth Martin?
Yes, it really is. And you could just, I don't know what she really looks like, but of course when I picture her, she looks exactly like Emily Proctor as Ainsley Hayes on season 2 of The West Wing.
Well, she's a member of the Tea Party Patriots, which is lots of fun to say, by the way.
Tea Party Patriots?
Tea Party Patriots. Yeah. Jenny Beth Martin. She insists it's nonpartisan.
Of course she does.
This event is about restoring honor and Tea Party Patriots. We have three core values: fiscal responsibility, constitutionally limited government, and free markets. And that's why we'll be there.
Oh, they sound like a fun-loving group of people. I bet that's just going to be a gay old time for everybody. Didn't tea slang for heroin? Or is tea
marijuana?
Is it marijuana?
Yeah.
Okay, I thought tea was something much more serious. It's just Mary Jane then.
It's just the Mary Jane.
All right.
As someone in the text box shares, there will be mad tea bagging.
Thank you for being the first person ever to make that joke.
Some civil rights groups call it a tasteless decision to hold the rally on the anniversary of Martin Luther King's "I Had a Dream" speech. Jenny Beth Martin says there's nothing.
Jenny Beth Martin, you get on in here and away from that Tucker boy.
Jenny Beth Martin says there's nothing inappropriate about it.
Jenny Beth Martin, you ain't pregnant again. I'm sorry. She says there's nothing what?
Inappropriate.
Okay, let's see.
I do not think that this is offensive. It's about Americans who care about this country regardless of political affiliation, regardless of skin color, who care about the country and want to restore honor to it.
Yeah, because there's going to be a lot of black and Hispanic Democrats at this thing.
Well, I guess it depends on how you're watching it. If you're watching it from, from the actual event, if you're in the crowd, no. If you're watching it on television, yes. Because the deal is, anytime, if you go to any sort of a gathering or a rally like this, I get the feeling that if you are a woman or black or, you're Hispanic or you're a Jew, you walk in and they just tag you on the ear with some sort of an electronic device like Marlon Perkins tagging a wildebeest so that the camera can find you then later on,
Yeah.
So when she says, "And we are here as representatives of all Americans," cut to black guy. The Tea Party is not a racist, cut to Mexican guy, movement. It is a movement for all peoples, cut to woman and Jew in rapid succession. And then just sort of, every third person, you come back to a nice, bland, unthreatening white face so that the vast swaths of the unwashed.
People don't get nervous.
So they don't, because then they might think that there's something afoot. They might think that those people are having some sort of an uprising. There's some sort of a revolution that they need to be hiding in their fruit cellars. All right, here is Don Taylor at the Legion of News news desk.
And then you will do. Yes.
It's right here.
Look at you. A Connecticut man who got stuck in his furnace and cut off his own arm to survive is getting a new bionic hand today. About 3 months ago, John Metz began what he thought would be a 5-minute repair of his boiler. 2 days later, his arm was still trapped. Hungry and dehydrated, he decided his best chance for survival would be to amputate the arm himself. After multiple surgeries, John is in recovery, but to truly get back to normal, he says he needs a prosthetic arm. Hanger Prosthetics and Orthotics in Weatherfield.
I don't know what orthotics are. Orthotics, the only reason I know even the word is because Hank Hill has one. And he says, "Peggy, have you seen my orthotic?" And it's just, and it's like, I don't, and he has that weird thing Mike Judge does where he sort of huffs out one of the syllables, "my orthotic." It's hilarious.
Like William Barucki.
Exactly. Yeah. That's exactly how he does it, actually. There's so many. And it's, but I don't know what the word actually means. I'm always so amused by hearing him say it that I forget to actually look it up. I'm going to look it up right now.
Okay, you do that.
This is one of those, so we don't have to go to the text box for everything. We just must wear the audience out with our rampant ignorance. So by the end of the day,
God, I have to tell them what something else is again.
They're just exhausted by having to educate us on every tiny little thing. Hold on. Orthotic. All right.
Well,
go ahead.
He is being fit with the newest model bionic hand, and later this afternoon, He'll be showing it to the world. Mets won't be the first in the state to get this type of prosthetic. Back in December of 2008, Robert Lingle, a Naugatuck, Connecticut father of five, became the first person in the state to receive a bionic hand from Hanger Prosthetics and Orthotics. It was more than 18 years after losing his left hand in a drunk driving accident. Metz's arm, the latest model, is a bit more advanced, but still has a more lifelike appearance and individual moving fingers.
By the way, the dictionary here says an orthotic. Well, first of all, they have the frustrating circular definition where it's just like an adjective that relates to the noun. Adjective relating to orthotics. But then below that, noun, orthotic. An artificial support or brace for the limbs or spine. But I don't really know what that means in point of fact. I don't know what that means as a practical matter.
And how it's different from a prosthetic.
Well, no, because that is an artificial limb. This is a support for an artificial limb.
Oh.
An artificial support or brace for the limbs or spine. So I don't know if that means, if it's like one of those things where it's like your arm has to remain elevated while it heals, and so it's like a little, one of those little bars that comes out and like keeps your arm sticking straight up or whatever. I have no explanation for that. I don't understand how any of these things work. All right. Well, it doesn't really matter. What is it? It is Friday, isn't it?
It is. It is Friday.
Goddamn. You know, and I just, here's the thing. And we've been counting down to this. We'll talk more about this maybe the next hour. We're now 1, 2, 3, 4, sort of like five, less than 5 days away, or fewer, I guess. Then 5 days, or is it less? No, it's fewer. 5 days away till Laura and I get this out-of-town guest who's going to be staying with us, whose identity I shouldn't reveal now because it'll get people all worked up. And there's no point in doing that. But
why would people get worked up over who your guest is? Is it like Dick Cheney?
Yes. Yes, it is. It's Dick Cheney.
Is Zsa Zsa Gabor recuperating in your living room?
No, here's the thing. And the thing about Dick Cheney doesn't like it when things are dirty. When things are dirty, things are grubby, things are stained, things are all filled with dirt. Dick Cheney gets upset about that. Dick Cheney gets angry. You wouldn't like Dick Cheney when he's angry. Because, you know, the next thing, you just come home and the whole place is on fire and he's stomping through the neighborhood on his giant cybernetic legs. It's just, it becomes a very unpleasant experience. So we got somebody coming who's going to be staying with us for like 2 days, and that's next week. And it's that thing where like every day, as I walk through the house, it's like I notice. And this is back to the thing of where you think I'm a gigantic slob, and apparently I am. Because now every day as I walk through the house, I notice more and more large patches of just ick on the carpet to the point that I'm either going to have to just and the thing is, now I don't even know. We've been talking about the Michael Beatty and the cleaning solution for a while to the point that he may not even be able to help me because he might be actually just like so massively backed up with business from the audience that I myself might be screwing me, you know, my own ability to get my house cleaned.
Sorry, Rick. Business is too good. Sorry. I can't clean your disgusting sofa.
That's the thing. I won't be able to come and help you make your place slightly more tolerable for an outside observer. I may just have to burn my own house to the ground and we might all be staying in a Motel 6 for a few days. Anyway, it doesn't matter. That's less your problem than mine. Your problem is whatever the stain or filth is in your own carpet, or maybe it's just a generalized cleaning. Or here's the thing. Here's a crazy idea. Maybe your house is actually clean to begin with, and like your rug, your carpet, your upholstery, whatever, something your furniture, as Dawn said, something you got like the cloth covering on your couch or whatever. Maybe it's not revoltingly dirty. Maybe you actually take care of your possessions, and the home is actually quite presentable. You keep it looking that way, so you don't find. Don't be like Rick. Rick is not a role model. You don't wake up a year from now and go, what have I done with my life and my rug? You just keep it looking as good as the day you got it by contacting Michael Beatty at the Cleaning Solution. That is 971-533-3211. 971-533-3211. And it doesn't necessarily mean that you're, an unkempt person. It's entirely possible that you have not adequately communicated the message of cleanliness to your pet, you know. Or they just heard it and then disregarded it to be obstinate. They do that sometimes. Doesn't matter. The point is you write this number down. It's 971-533-3211. They'll clean your place up and keep it looking clean evermore. Here is Dawn Taylor at the Legion of News News Desk.
Investigators recovered two bodies on Mount Hood Thursday that they believe were Anthony Vietti and his climbing companion, Katie Nolan.
You keep using his name, and I don't have any idea how it actually is spelled because I can't tell if you are pronouncing it correctly or if you're doing a sort of accenting that is confusing sounding.
Well, it's Vietti. Which I believe would be pronounced Vietti.
Vietti.
Yes.
Yes. Okay. All right.
Did you think I was?
I thought it was like
implying he was a Yeti or something. Or
no, I thought it was like a, no, no, no. I thought you were trying to be. I thought you were doing that Alex Trebek thing, where he tries to accent. I'm sorry. The correct answer was Tijuana.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, and it's, I thought you were trying to do like a sort of like it was Vieri, you know, or something with an accent mark over the R.
No, you don't want to do that.
We can move on now.
Many of the same expert climbers who searched for the pair last year were among those who recovered the bodies. They said it was a very emotional day for all of them. The bodies were found at the 9,700-foot level of Reed Headwall, and it appeared that the two climbers had fallen down a steep slope. Climbers at the scene Thursday said the two were still roped together and located only about 2 feet apart. When we went back up, the warming we had this week had melted more of the snow, and we could see we had both remains there, said Bob Brownback of Portland Mountain Rescue. Searchers said the location of the remains made it likely they were Vieti and Nolan, who never made it off the mountain from a December 2009 climb.
I wonder what percentage of people who climb Mount Hood just manage to snuff it at some point while they're up there.
I think it's a fairly small percentage, just that those are the ones we hear about, because, of course, you're not going to, like, see in the news. It's like, hey, someone went up Mount Hood and didn't die.
Because, well, but I mean, it's not just, well, because Mount Hood is, it's big. I'm not talking about just going down to, like, the lower levels of it or something for, like, a family outing or, like, you know, like having a picnic at the base of it. I'm talking about somebody who tries to scale Mount Hood, you know?
Yeah.
Like, these guys were obviously trying to get to the top of Mount Hood close to the top. They were climbing up into the, whatever, you know, the death zone or whatever it is they call the area at the top of a mountain. I wonder what percentage of the people who say, like, I'm going to get to the top of Mount Hood and then go all the way back down. What percentage of those folks die or are seriously injured?
Maybe you should make a note of that, and we could find a climbing expert and ask them.
Maybe. I am trying to figure out if I really find it that interesting. Here's the thing is I'm just – because I know what it is for Everest. I know, and granted, they're two different-sized mountains. But I know for Everest it's – what do you think? Do you know the answer to this? Because I know.
I do not know.
Okay. I'll have you guess here in a second. Of the people who every year – attempt to get to the top of Everest. I mean, they make a serious attempt to climb all the way to the top of Mount Everest and back down. What percentage do you think die?
Well, do you know roughly how many people it is that try?
No, but that doesn't really matter because I'm asking you a percentage. So that is inflexible. That doesn't change.
I guess.
Let's say there's 100 people. I mean.
Okay. But 10%.
It is 1 in 4. 25% of people who try to climb to the top of Mount Everest die. So, I mean, if an activity kills 1 in 4 people that tries it, it seems like maybe that's an activity that fewer people ought to try. Maybe, maybe that's something that we really ought not be doing. And for Mount Hood, it's probably a much smaller percentage because it's not Mount Everest or anything. I'm just saying.
Someone, a listener in the text box, takes issue with your assertion that the top of Mount Hood is referred to as the death zone.
I didn't say the top of Mount Hood was referred to as the death zone. I was just sort of saying, you know, whatever it is they call it. And for lack of, that was a placeholder term, sir or madam. I was just noting, until the actual term was made clear to me, that was just there to represent where the official term will eventually be placed in my lexicon, you dick.
Let's assume science news.
Sure,
shall we?
Fine. Are you saying that wasn't sciencey enough?
That's so, pretty sciencey.
Calling the top of Mount Hood the death zone?
Science-ish.
I wish I was able to put. I don't know how the reverb function on this control board works, or I'd add a lot of, you know, death zone, 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 zone to it.
You don't know how the reverb works?
No.
You should learn how to use that.
I'll look into that. Here's Don Taylor.
Powdered water is now a reality, and it may also save the planet from global warming.
Quit making things up.
In science circles, it's known as dry water, and it seems those circles have kept it to themselves for a while because it was actually discovered in 1968, but then it was forgotten about. It was rediscovered in 2006 for study purposes, but it's taken a group of scientists at the University of Liverpool, to find a use for it. There's nothing else quite like it, researcher Ben Carter said. Hopefully, we may see dry water making waves in the future. Scientists are funny. It is actually tiny droplets of water coated in modified silica, better known in nature as sand. They make up 95% of the powdered water, and the silica prevents the droplets from combining and creating a liquid version. The result is a substance that resembles fine sugar and one that has the potential to provide a lucrative return for its powerful ability to soak up gases. Don't try and figure out how the reverb works now while I'm talking.
I'm trying to reverberate your voice during this story. Just to see if it's really as amusing as you think it is.
Reading the story and you're over there fiddling with knobs.
You know, you're the one who asked me to look into the reverb function.
Not right now.
Okay, that wasn't made clear. There was no specification made. You did not explicate the time frame in which I was to accomplish this task.
Well, stop it. You're distracting me.
All right. Well,
I'm trying to work here.
You know, but you should be more...
I can't work like this!
More clear about these things
in the
future.
I'm a professional! All right. Fuck the.
All right. Would you like to move on?
Dry water.
All right. Here's Dawn Taylor.
Giant cave bears thought to have once dined on each other might have been driven to extinction by the advance of humanity, scientists now suggest. Cave bears are named after the places where their bones are often found. Caves across Europe. These giants were roughly a third larger than the modern grizzly bears, and while scientists previously thought cave bears were vegetarians, recent findings hinted they might also have consumed meat and possibly even cannibalized each other. Cave bear populations started to plummet 24,000 years ago, dying out roughly 20,000 years ago, back when ice dominated the Earth. The cause was unknown. Now an international team of scientists analyzing DNA in 17 newly identified fossils of cave bears has revealed the decline started 50,000 years ago, much earlier than previously suggested. Comparing DNA sequences from cave bear mitochondria, the powerhouses within their cells, with 40 modern and fossil DNA samples from brown bears to find out why the former went extinct and why the latter did not, it turns out that cave bears and other carnivores started receiving serious competition for those caves from the cavemen 50,000 years ago.
I cannot tell you how totally uninterested I am in this story as contrasted with the powdered water thing that you just decided to quit reading, like, for no reason. So what is the deal? And by the way, just like moments after you ordered me not to screw around with the reverb anymore, I found the reverb button, which I'm not going to use now. You don't get to know what it sounds like. Sorry. That's a thing. That avenue of enjoyment will be closed off to you because you scolded me.
You know how hot you are when you're passive aggressive.
I'm just saying. You know, I got the button right here.
You know how that just plays with all my daddy issues. It just gets me all.
Can we be done with creepy time?
You want to hear about the dry water?
I'm just asking what it is. I don't understand if it's dry. If it's powder, how is it still water?
It's tiny droplets of water coated in silica. So then it doesn't become liquid.
So this is basically like that's like saying that if I just took a bunch of tiny, tiny water bottles and put it in a satchel, I could say I had a satchel full of powdered water because it's just like basically inside a plastic coating.
Well, the thing is, though, that the little bits are very, very small. The substance resembles finely ground sugar.
Right.
So basically,
it's like little plastic bubbles filled with water.
Except that instead of being bubbles, they're like sort of sand. They're harder on the inside.
What is the point? Why would I want to take this with me anywhere? Is this one of those things scientists have created that has no actual purpose?
They believe that it can absorb and store greenhouse gases like carbon dioxide. And so it might be able to absorb them out of the atmosphere. They found that dry water absorbed over three times as much carbon dioxide as ordinary uncombined water and silica in the same space of time. It could also be used to collect and store gas in commercial quantities that are difficult to mine, such as frozen methane deposits on the ocean floor.
This is going to be one of those things where I got this excoriating email over the weekend, followed by... I got this email from a guy who then apologized in a subsequent email about 2 hours later and explained that he was really drunk on whiskey when he sent the first email, which is interesting because the apology sounded way drunker than the actual scolding that I got. But it was from him telling me that, quote, almost no one tunes into your program to hear your thoughts on science, so knock it off, end quote. And it wasn't that no one tunes in. He said he was sure that almost no one tuned in, which is sort of great.
Probably a couple of guys.
Yeah, because that implies that somewhere in this sad country of ours, there's actually somebody who says, no, we got to tune in to Legion of News. I don't know anything about science, but they're going to set me straight. They're going to teach me everything I need to know. The whole thing about carbon dioxide is just a big mystery to me because, to repeat a common theme on this program, this is one of those things where scientists just seem to make stuff up every decade or so that contradicts everything that they made up a decade before. When you were growing up, were you not taught that carbon dioxide was just a thing that we actually had to have in huge amounts because without it, trees would die? Because I was. That's what they told me.
That doesn't really sound right.
Yeah, because trees need carbon dioxide to live because they convert it back into oxygen. That is what trees breathe.
Okay.
And so, and I'm not saying that is necessarily what they would say now, but when I was in school, that was what they taught me for years and years and years. They said we have to have, like, massive, the more of it, the better. Because every single thing, anything that is leafy and green, anything that, and I don't even think it's necessary for photosynthesis. I think it's just anything that is like a tree or a plant that has chlorophyll needs carbon dioxide to breathe because we breathe in oxygen and we breathe out carbon dioxide and plants do exactly the opposite. And so it was this symbiotic effect. And the more people we needed, therefore the more carbon dioxide we had to have. because there was, we were using, you know, we were putting more of it back into the air or whatever. So anyway, I'm just saying, it's just one of those things that make any sense to me. I have no idea how this world is just a gigantic mystery, Don. It's a big cavalcade of I was going to say perplexities, and I don't even know if that's a real word, but I'm going to say that it is. Speaking of that guy, and people who may or may not be tuning in to hear our thoughts on science, you know, we have more absurdities that are heard every day on a program called The Rick Emerson Show, and that airs over at rickemerson.com starting around 1 o'clock today. And we'll talk about how you, yes, you, could in fact become a lucky listener of The Rick Emerson Show, whether you are not a, whether or not you are a current subscriber. That's coming up today at 1 o'clock. We'll have a penis watch, religious nutcase watch, stupid criminal of the week. We'll do today's top five. Today's top five, Don Taylor's top five songs from a musical. Top five songs from a musical. I also have some sound from this. So Cameron has put out this like special edition of Avatar already, and it's in theaters already, which is awesome. It's just like, even by that guy's standards, it's just like a shameless money grab.
So it's in 4D.
I've got some. One, and the 4D is where you can actually just, the hand comes off the screen and goes into your wallet and just extracts your platinum card and just maxes it out right while you're in the theater. So we'll talk about all that stuff coming up later on. If you are not a current listener of The Rick Emerson Show, if you're not subscribing, or perhaps if you are but you know somebody who is missing out on the magic and glory that is the Rick Emerson radio program, they can become a subscriber for less than you might imagine. And by less, I mean zero. That is the Rick Emerson Grant, in conjunction with our friends at New Millennium Landscape and Maintenance. And they do they basically do stuff that no one else wants to do around your house, whether it's nuisance abatement or maintenance or landscaping. They can help make your house and your yard a little cleaner and tidier. You can find out more about this at rickemerson.com. They are helping us present the Rick Emerson Grant. What that means is you make yourself a YouTube video of no more than 2 minutes in length describing why you or somebody you know ought to receive a one-month subscription to the Rick Emerson Show for absolutely nothing. You send the link for that video to video@rickemerson.com, and each and every calendar month we're going to be giving away 10 subscriptions of 1 month each to the Rick Emerson radio program. 10 one-month subscriptions. So you film that video, no more than 2 minutes. You send the link to video@rickemerson.com. Thank you to our friends at New Millennium Maintenance. This is Don Taylor.
So I keep meaning to ask, is nuisance abatement, is that a nice way of saying they get rid of, like, gophers and possums?
I was thinking homeless people, but gophers, sure, mm-hmm. as well, yes.
Hipsters? They'll keep the hipsters off your lawn?
No, I mean, if you just got some sort of, I don't know, if you're being besieged by an army of woodchucks or something, I mean, they come and they help you take out the trash a little bit. Yeah.
Kyron Harmon's father said the missing boy's Wall of Hope will be moving from Skyline School in Northwest Portland this weekend. The collection of stuffed animals, cards, poems, and balloons that line a fence near the school will come down Sunday, Kane Harmon said. He did not specify its new location, but said he'll provide more details on Friday. Washington County deputies said a woman came forward and reported she was the driver in a hit-and-run that killed an 18-year-old in Beaverton. Cassidy Ringwald was walking with his sister on the shoulder near Northwest 119th Avenue and Kearney Street Thursday evening when he was hit from behind by a vehicle. The victim was thrown 15 to 20 feet and knocked unconscious. He was taken to Legacy Emanuel Hospital, where he later died, hospital staff said. The driver fled the scene. Deputies described the woman as a person of interest and said the investigation is ongoing. She has not yet been arrested. Umatilla County District Attorney Dean Gushua has stepped aside while he is under investigation for a possible sex crime. The East Oregonian reports Gushua said Thursday he asked the state's Department of Justice to appoint someone to take his place during the investigation, quote, for the good of the county. Department spokesman Tony Green said it will handle DA duties temporarily during the investigation. The case began on August 16th when Pendleton police took a report of a sex crime. Chief Stuart Roberts said his agency referred the case to the Department of Justice.
Okay, wait, are there no details on the sex crime? That's what I was waiting. That's what everybody was waiting for.
I know,
hear.
Everybody wants to know, but it doesn't say.
Why do they even note that it's a sex crime if they're not going to give us details? That's just unfair.
Just
that's
a tease.
I was going to say that story's asking for it.
God.
That story led us on, Don Taylor. It let us think we were going to get a little something at the end, and then the story didn't give us what we wanted at the end. And that story is going to have to pay the price for that. I think we all know what I'm talking about.
Can police attach a homing device onto your car without a search warrant, Rick Emerson?
I'm just picturing a pigeon being taped to the underside of my car. We'll find him now.
A recent decision by a Western federal appeals court. You just cracked yourself up.
I really did. I don't know why. I think it's just because I just pictured like a pigeon with a look on his face like, it's a living, sort of being duct taped to the underside of my car.
A recent decision by a Western federal...
And how would that even work? The mechanics of the logistics are all wrong. I mean, so you tape a pigeon to the underside of my car. What then? What is step two? It doesn't even work. I don't know why my brain would have come up with that. It could be completely non-functional.
Unless it's a large enough homing pigeon that it could fly away with your car and take it elsewhere.
No, see, but that's just dumb because he's taped down. How would he even flap his little pigeon wings?
Well, maybe it depends on how you tape him. If you taped him like his torso to the car, but left his wings free.
They're not taping Quetzalcoatl to my car. It's a pigeon. All right, let's move on.
A recent decision by a Western federal appeals court says, yes, Rick Emerson, the police can put a homing device on your car without a search warrant.
Any kind of surveillance that involves you being in public and the people who are following you being in public, of course, does not require any warrants.
That sounds like something other than what they're talking about, though, because that's... Hold on, let me hear
that
one.
Any kind of surveillance that involves you being in public and the people who are following you being in public, of course, does not require any warrants.
Well, yeah, this is Justice Department Attorney David Rifkin. He says that shouldn't be a problem because it's not much different than police doing a stakeout.
I think the law is actually pretty clear on that. If it's your driveway, it's your private property.
And that's a different guy.
All right. Well, but I'm really unclear about this. So they can or they cannot?
Well, the Justice Department says yes. They say that it's the same thing as the police doing a stakeout.
Oh, I see. So it's not like a court hasn't said it yet. It's that, like,
no.
the man says yes, and lawyers probably say no.
A federal appeals court says yes, but some other judges say they don't believe so.
No, because it requires – I would think that requires – if they're going to attach it to your car, unless it's going to be in, like, the hood – they've got to invade the perimeter of your car, which is your private space, and they have to have probable cause for that, I would think. I'm not a lawyer, obviously, but I mean, it just seems like, you know, in other words, they couldn't be putting something in your trunk, probably, because they don't have probable cause to enter the actual you know, the actual space that your car occupies. They can't intrude in that space, I don't think, unless they have a warrant or unless they have some reason to believe that there is wrongdoing happening, like, at that moment.
Well, and apparently that's what this is about, saying that they could put something on the outside of your car without a warrant. And then if you listen to what this privacy advocate says, the second soundbite.
I think the law is actually pretty clear on that. If it's your driveway, it's your private property.
All right. Well, this is like...
But if your car isn't in your driveway, say it's on a city street.
It's still your private property, though.
The car is your property.
Yeah.
So I would think that they shouldn't be able to.
I never know how any of this works. This is... It's all very... Does that mean that, like, you could then put a homing device on somebody else's car if you were just a private citizen? Because it seems like...
There's all kinds of things that the cops can do that you're not allowed to do.
But I mean, that doesn't really break any laws, right? Like, if I were to go put a tracking device in your car, I guess you could make the case that, like, what law have I broken? I'm not trespassing.
Yeah, but there could be anti-stalking laws.
Yeah, but if I say I'm not, but if, in other words, that's a separate thing.
Yes, if you say you're not.
But you have to prove that I'm actually following you, though. Just sticking the device on your car doesn't actually, you know. If I stick the device in your car, but then I'm just sitting at home.
Yeah, but I'm thinking that would imply intent to follow.
Well, I would think so. I think we're both acting like we're lawyers now.
This is like the science stuff. We don't know what we're talking about.
This is like that episode of Homicide where the two guys are sitting in a bar drinking all day and they're fighting about which of their squadrons in Vietnam was the most badass, and they stab each other to death, and it turns out that neither of them were in Vietnam. That's exactly what's happening right here. We're just escalating. You're wrong, counselor. All right. This is Don Taylor at the Legion of News News Desk.
A Washington State man who went to court to face a methamphetamine charge is in more trouble after authorities say he showed up at court with a bag of meth in his pants. The 33-year-old Bremerton man...
Hold on. We really have to do this. This is... Okay, go ahead. I'll let you...
The 33-year-old Bremerton man had to be booked and released from the Kitsap County Jail before Tuesday's court appearance in Port Orchard. That's standard procedure. The Kitsap Sun reports that a guard found a bag of meth in the man's pocket during a pat-down at the jail. Now he's facing a new felony drug possession charge.
I don't know why it goes to this barking dog thing here. This bit doesn't make any sense.
No.
And then it goes back to this, like, Baby Huey thing here.
Yeah, cartoon.
Well, I'm just a big, dumb idiot. This is like the bed that accompanies that, is it, this makes it impossible to think, by the way. This is like some Guantanamo brain jamming device. This bed right here, though.
This would be like the worst music for your alarm clock in the morning ever.
Wasn't there a Warner Brothers cartoon that has a retarded vulture?
Yeah.
Okay, that's you know, oh, Ma. This is exactly the music that accompanies him. All right, I have to turn that off. Here's Dawn Taylor.
Let's do entertainment news instead.
All right, here's your entertainment news for Friday, right here at Legion of News.
Levi Johnson, the father of Sarah Palin's grandson, says he wishes he hadn't apologized for telling lies about the former Alaska governor because he's, quote, never lied about anything. Johnston said in an interview on CBS's The Early Show that will air Friday, he wishes he hadn't issued the apology to Palin. I really don't regret anything, Johnston said. But the only thing I wish I shouldn't have done is put out that apology because it kind of makes me sound like a liar. And I've never lied about anything. So that's probably the only thing. The rest of the stuff I can live with.
I'm really confused now. He wishes he hadn't apologized for lying about...
Yeah.
He wishes he hadn't apologized for lying about something about Sarah Palin because he's never lied.
Right. Because it makes him look like a liar that he apologized and said he was a liar.
I don't know what's going on. All right.
What's going on is he's an idiot.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I almost hope that she gets elected president just to see if he vanishes, you know, at some point. You know, like if she takes office and then just like he is found reduced to a fine granular substance in a bag in the desert.
I think that's why he keeps coming out and doing things. He's like, why he's on the cover, why he's in Playgirl, why he apologizes, that he doesn't apologize. He knows that he's smart enough to know that if he keeps showing up on TV, people will remember who he is. That as soon as he drops out of the public eye, he's just going to end up in a ditch somewhere in South America.
Seriously, the spotlight is the only thing keeping him alive right now. Well done.
I can't. They have to be able to notice I'm gone.
That's a guy who really ought to be attaching a homing device to some part of him right now, because at some point he's just going to vanish into a black bag somewhere and you're never going to see him again.
Musician Harry Connick Jr. joins CNN's Larry King Friday night for a special show on the 5th anniversary of Hurricane Katrina. Connick says New Orleans has really turned things around.
I'm sorry. Is it only 5 years ago? Jesus.
A long way to go, but certainly if there were lessons to be learned from Hurricane Katrina, I think the people here, the government, the citizens, everybody's learned those lessons, and they seem to be moving along.
Here's the thing about Harry Connick Jr., and I almost feel bad for saying this because I realize that I don't really have any evidence. When he comes up with, you know, when I go to the file folder in my head, marked Harry Connick Jr., the first thing that comes up is dumb. But, you know, there's nothing he's ever done, I don't think, to indicate that he is a stupid man.
Yeah, yet, I don't think he is.
For some reason, he's flagged in my memory, you know, as stupid guy. And I don't know why. Maybe I'm confusing him in the character he's played at some point.
I think it's because he kind of promoted this sort of aw gee shucks sort of persona.
He has like a hayseed kind of a thing that he pushes. That's probably it.
The musician tells King things are really exciting in New Orleans, and people have learned a lot of lessons.
You couple that with the Super Bowl victory in February, it really has a positive energy down here now. It's pretty exciting. Something I didn't think I would feel in 5 years. That's for sure.
You know, and that's one of the I keep meaning to. I'm such a terrible consumer of popular culture. I have not yet watched Tremé, which is the post Katrina the David Simon series on HBO, which I think they may have wrapped the first season already. It may have either finished or it's about to finish. And I have not yet watched it. And I hear that it's quite good. But
I watched the first two or three, and it is really good, but it just never really grabbed me.
Well, see, here's the thing about that, though, is that. It's the same thing with The Wire, though, where if you just watch the first like two or three, you'll be like, you know, you ask any Wire, anybody who's like a nutcase fan for The Wire, like myself, and they all go, you know, well, the first two or three. And then, you know, but I mean, you've met us. You know what we're like. You meet people who then watch the whole thing about The Wire and we're just like crackheads for it. So it's I heard that it is a much more languid program than The Wire. Because how could it not be, right? Because The Wire is like a cop procedural. It's you know, the Wire is effectively a procedural about busting drug dealers. And at the same time about the rise of a drug dealing empire. Whereas Tremé doesn't, I'm not going to say it doesn't have a story, because again, I haven't watched this season, but apparently it seems to be a much more, a style piece and an exercise in atmospherics than it does an actual story arc the way The Wire is. But I love the cast. Even Steve Zahn, who was a guy that I really soured on in recent years. I do like him sort of in theory. Are we still in entertainment news here?
Yes.
All right, fantastic.
Joey Lawrence ripped his cornea when another actor hit him in the eye with a script, according to TMZ.
No.
He was reportedly rehearsing Melissa and Joey, his ABC family series with Melissa Joan Hart, when the actor leaned in to hug Melissa and, script in hand, stabbed Joey's eye by mistake. Hey, my tweet peeps, He tweeted on Thursday, "Sorry for being AWOL. I got hit in the eye yesterday morning by accident in the set, and it ripped my cornea. Trying to heal."
I don't think that... Okay, first of all, I don't think he knows what the word ripped. Ripped is not what happened. It sounds like it cut his cornea, which is bad enough, by the way. And everybody is cringing as we talk about this, including myself. So don't feel like you're the only one at home going, ha, ha, ha. It sounds like it was a... I can't even believe I'm saying this out loud. A paper cut on his eyeball is what that sounds like. Ripping is sort of like when you just take some pliers to it or something. This sounds like it's just sort of a... I have the worst cornea ripping story ever. I won't tell it. I'm going to keep it in my back pocket as a threat, though. And if I ever need to just pull out, like, the sort of scorched earth policy of injury stories on this show, okay. I'm going to go right to that the cornea ripping thing that I have. This just sounds like a paper cut on your eye, which seems singularly unpleasant.
Yes.
That doesn't sound like a thing you want.
Well, he did say on Twitter, "Thank you for all your well wishes, my tweeters. I'm in some pain right now, but trying to heal quickly. Love you all."
I'm trying to figure out whether Twitter is a good or a bad thing in this regard, in that, not that I ever really felt Joey Lawrence was like a Mensa or anything, but that it just reveals celebrities to be, you know, like as bland and dumb as everybody else. You know, they're really not all that special. Did you ever see this? Did you ever see like a Twitter update or whatever from some celebrity you really like? And even if it's not flat out stupid, it's just sort of banal. And you go, well, my God, you know, insert name of celebrity. And my God, Tom Hanks, you're really not that interesting. And then you just, you know, and then you're just sad for a little while. Then you just sort of, you know, then you cry yourself to sleep a little bit that night.
Yes. Yes, you do.
Busy over there?
Yes.
Okay.
Spanish singer Julio Iglesias has married Dutch model Miranda Runsberger, his partner for the past 20 years. The 66-year-old singer announced the marriage in a statement to Spanish newspapers. The wedding took place at the Virgen del Carmen Church in the southern jet-set resort of Marbella. He said that, the ceremony was attended by two witnesses and the couple's five children.
This is Julio Iglesias?
Julio Iglesias.
All right.
A judge says there's enough evidence for a woman to stand trial on a charge of slashing Leonardo DiCaprio's face with glass during a 2005 party. A preliminary hearing ended Thursday with 40-year-old Aretha Wilson being ordered to face one count of assault with a deadly weapon. She pleaded not guilty and remains jailed in lieu of $150,000 bail. This is that woman that attacked Leonardo DiCaprio and said she thought he was her boyfriend and mistook him for someone else.
Okay. It seems like I could have gone from the... I should have been able to do this right around the time you were talking about Julio Iglesias, and then I did not... I failed to make this segue work properly. I should have gone right from there to the Castalia Language Center to see how I could have, like, done
I
a sort
that.
Of, you know...
Yes.
I don't know. If I had time to sort of, you know, to kind of workshop this a little bit, maybe to go to a writer's group, you know, kick a few ideas around, I could come up with some sort of a segue from that story to this discussion of Castalia Language Center. Wait. No, I have nothing. I will just say this. They are a small private school in downtown Portland. They offer Spanish language classes for adults. And somebody emailed me, I don't know, maybe 2-3 days ago, and they asked, not like they were really challenging me on it as such, but they just sort of asked why I said that adults learn differently than kids. And it's, I'm not like, an encephalologist or anything. But it's one of those things where kids are sort of like self-extracting software programs where you kind of like, you know, you just sort of double click on install and then they just sort of figure out what they need and they assess the, you know, the system specifications and they, you know. And then here's the other thing. Do you ever like install a computer program and it says like, in what language do you wish to do that, you know? And then there's the drop down menu for what language the program ought to be in. And so when you select English or, you know, Spanish or whatever, then it just says, okay. And then it can just purge all the rest of the files to save space. And, you know, and that's kind of how your brain works. So, you know, they always say if you have a kid, you want to start teaching the kid to be bilingual, like, from day one. It's really the time to do it because it's like they can just multitask and learn, like, three languages at once. As you get to be, like, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, your brain just figures out, aha, no, we're mainly using this language here, so we'll just close off these other rooms over here. And then sections of your brain just sort of go into, like, a dormancy where you normally would have other languages. So when you're an adult, you'll learn differently. So you go to Castalia Language Center, and you can take a Spanish language class with other adults. And they're small classes, too. It's, like, 8 people, which is great because it just means you're going to get more, more focused instruction, more one-on-one help if you need it. Clara Grebel, who is she's the owner of the school. She runs the school. school. She's a native Spanish speaker, originally from Argentina. She is now in Portland running Castalia Language Center. And most importantly, they're going to work with the time, or the lack of time, to be more specific, that you probably have, which means that as interesting as it might be, they're not going to spend a lot of time on the history of the language, you know, or the history of the culture or how it developed, because, you know, it's all great and well, but you're there to learn the language itself, and you're there to learn it in a way that's actually going to function in your day-to-day life. So you can find out more about Castalia Language Center at PortlandSpanish.com. PortlandSpanish.com, all one word. Castalia Language Center, a small private school in downtown Portland that offers Spanish language classes for adults and proud sponsors of the Emerson News Network. We have more entertainment news, or are we
done? We
do. All right, fantastic.
I did just want to follow that by saying, mi queso es muy malo.
Okay.
Tonight on TV, there's a new episode of Wife Swap, in which Amanda Hess, a Pennsylvania wife and mother whose family has 29 pets, no rules, and she has no fashion sense, trades places with Samantha Adams, a strict Kentucky mother with a disciplined and stylish family who can't tolerate animals and who believes that, quote, fashion is more important than air. There's a three-part miniseries on Animal Planet called Blood Dolphins.
I don't think I'm going to watch that.
Yeah, it's kind of an unfortunate name, but it follows Richard Rick O'Berry, a dolphin activist and member of the Marine Mammal Team of Earth Island Institute, and they spotlight the plight of dolphins worldwide.
Oh, this isn't so like a, this isn't a blood dolphin isn't like the really isn't the really exotic but politically incorrect kind of dolphin you give your beloved for an engagement gift.
It is. It is,
honey,
indeed.
I dug this dolphin out of a mine in Zaire. A legless boy crawled out of a cave holding it in his teeth.
I believe that was Julio Iglesias' engagement gift to his wife.
And now I give you a bouquet of a dozen blood dolphins.
On Cinemax tonight, showing Watchmen. So if you haven't seen Watchmen,
Do something else. Maybe see the outdoors. Get some ice cream.
On the other hand, on TCM, A Light in the Piazza, starring Olivia de Havilland, movie from 1962. Olivia de Havilland plays an American tourist visiting Rome with her adult daughter, played by Yvette Mimieux, and the daughter falls in love with a dashing Italian.
There's not enough things
played by George Hamilton.
Olivia de Havilland on television these days. There's an abject lack of Olivia de Havilland.
The best part about Light in the Piazza, though, is circa 1962 George Hamilton playing an Italian guy.
Yeah, well,
the accent, not
bad,
so good.
Bad.
Not so good. And at 9:30 p.m. on the History Channel, Modern Marvel's Essentials, new episode looks at salt, the more than 14,000 known uses for the miracle mineral that flavors our food, serves as an energy conductor, and even keeps drivers safe on icy winter roads.
There's the thing about Modern Marvels is that they can do, this is really, it really is all about the singer, not the song, because I've seen Modern Marvels do, you know, things like they did salt. What the hell? If you're a phone, oh, you know, it's our phone ringing. Hold on. Let me turn that off. All right. I just shunned whoever that was. I just sent them right to voicemail. Oh. That's me. I forgot to disable the Rick Emerson Show telephone. Now somebody is calling, think they were on the air now. I hope that wasn't somebody offering just to, you know, give us piles of money for some reason because I've just...
Maybe it was someone who wanted to say something about the news.
Well, it doesn't matter. No. That choice is now off their personal menu. Anyway, I was just going to say, though, that you watch Modern Marvels and they do this thing where, you know, they'll talk about something really ultra specific. Like, they'll do an entire show about, like, the history of coffee or, you know, salt in this case. And they make it really gripping and really, really fascinating in a way that you feel like you are actually sort of informed again. As opposed to, like, what is that goddamn thing on that horrible thing on NPR, the Splendid Table?
Yeah.
Where you just, you know.
I always think I'll enjoy the Splendid Table, and then I just end
up kind
of.
And then you never do.
Yeah.
You never do. And the Splendid Table, which is, it's just like, it's like the pontiest show you've ever heard. It's the prissiest broadcast in the history of radio. And the Splendid Table is like the radio equivalent of that horrific show on the Food Network, The Barefoot Contessa. Which just makes me want to pull my eyes out, you know, with an ice cream scoop. It's the worst thing. And it's always when I'm looking for something really interesting to watch. I'm like, you know, then I'm like, hey, maybe that show's on where the guy eats horse hooves on the, you know, on the streets of Mexico or something. And then you just tune in and it's like, you know, and it's like you feel like you're suddenly being taken to a cotillion, like at the point, at the end of a gun.
Does Tom Likas still do his food show?
His wine show?
His wine show?
Yes, he does. He does that online. Yes, they have the tasting room with Tom Likas.
Well, also, birthdays today.
Did I just say the Barefoot Contessa and it reminded you of Tom Likas?
No, well, we were talking about you said NPR, and I thought radio, and I thought show about.
I was just wondering what it was that triggered Tom Likas. If it was just me talking about the.
Yes, Ina Garten, the barefoot contessa, always reminds me of Tom Likas. They look a lot alike.
Yeah. All right. Here's Don Taylor.
Today's birthdays: David Soul, former Sarsky and Hutch actor, is 67.
67.
Daniel Stern, the narrative voice of The Wonder Years, 53. Jack Black, this kind of surprise. Jack Black is 41. Leanne Rimes is 28. And singer Michael Jackson would have been 52.
Leanne Rimes is how old?
28.
Seems like she had to be older than that, but I guess she was like 9 or something when she had her first.
It's Jason Priestley's birthday, too. He's 41.
Yeah, see, and I would have guessed he was slightly older than that as well. But, I mean, you know, you can just never tell. At one point, I decided I was going to start shaving years off my age. And then it's like I just got lazy and I kept I would forget to write it down. So whenever my age would come up, I would forget what age I claimed to be. And then I had to just fall back on telling the truth because it was the easiest thing to remember. So I was going to start just taking 5 years off whatever I really was. So, like, today I would be, like, 32.
See, I just proudly admit to being 73.
Yeah.
And I figure, you know, I have to just roll with that. That's all the entertainment news.
There you go. Don Taylor, ladies and gentlemen. Fantastic. Don't forget, by the way, the Rick Emerson radio program comes your way at 1 o'clock. If you've never heard the Rick Emerson radio program, you're a fool. You're a fool. And you can remedy that by going to rickemerson.com. You subscribe for the low, low cost of just 32 cents a day. Coming up today, Penis Watch, Religious Nutcase Watch, Stupid Criminal of the Week. We also have Don Taylor's top five songs from a musical. We'll be getting to that. Plus, a whole pile of little bits and pieces. Oh, and somebody asked me. So yesterday I was playing this. We opened the show. Don was having a. You were in a little bit of a. Maybe not even a funk. You just felt like you were off kilter yesterday.
Yeah.
And by the end of Legion of New. See, because we. So just real quickly here. This is not the. So we do this show from noon to one. And then at one we do the. You know, a little bit after one we do the Rick Emerson show. So if you've ever said to yourself, by God, I love that Legion of News. If only they didn't draw to a close after a mere hour. Yeah, I feel like there's a paucity of Rick and Dawn in my life because I get 6 hours, you know, 5 hours per week. It's just not enough. So, you know, 1 o'clock we do the Rick Emerson show. You sort of felt off kilter during this program yesterday. And then we got into the Rick Emerson show. And I wanted to make sure that you started with a smile on your face. So I did. I put together what I believe I called the gayest introduction ever. Which was just a whole series of long Paul Stanley stage raps from various Kiss live performances, followed by something from Showgirls. And so somebody asked me, because we played like 3 of those Paul Stanley things in a row, and a guy asked me how many of those I had, and the answer is 105. So I may actually just start doing like 3 of those a day just to amuse myself. I've got 105 cuts of Paul Stanley on stage saying things, and they all start with "Whoa yeah" or "Oh yeah" or "Oa," which is another thing he says a lot. He went through this period in the 70s, like from 75 to 79, where every single phrase that ever came out of Paul Stanley's mouth started with him saying "Oh hey!" And I don't even know how you spell that. It's like an O-O-O-A-Y sort of a thing. It just kind of trails off. So I think we may start today's show with those as well.
Okay.
Anyway, I don't know what my point there was. Let's do one more and then we'll draw everything to a close here.
Terrified passengers flying from London to Hong Kong reportedly braced for a possible crash into the sea after a pilot mistakenly played an emergency message. According to The Sun, the 275 passengers on the British Airways Boeing 747 heard the message, "This is an emergency. We may shortly need to make an emergency landing on water." The passengers prepared for the worst as they headed over the North Sea until cabin crew ran down the aisles of the plane to reassure them the message had been played in error.
Wow.
One passenger, Michelle Lord, 32, said, "People were terrified. We all thought we were going to die."
Why would that function even exist? Why would that even be there? Why couldn't the pilot just say, "Hey, we're going to crash. Everybody head between your knees."
British Airways, which said the incident took place within the last 7 days, explained the message was an automatic one that had been triggered by a computer. A BA spokesman said, "We would like to apologize to passengers on board the flight for causing them undue distress. Our cabin crew immediately made an announcement following the message, advising customers that it was played in error and the flight would continue as normal."
That's fantastic. All right, that's a great story to end the week. Well done, Don Taylor. Well done. Legion of News is brought to you each and every weekday by PDX.fm and originates from the studios of the Emerson News Network. At the news desk is Don Taylor, advanced technology and magic provided by Thomas Gill, executive producer Bruce Agler, chief of staff is Cheryl Kanakoa. The Rick Emerson Show begins next at rickemerson.com. This has been another exciting episode of
Legion of News on PDX.fm.